Hey, listeners, it's time for Leadership Happy Hour, the podcast for leaders that want to lead better, lead smarter, and get shit done. Grab a cold one and let's get ready to groove. Here's your host, a leader who's been fire baptized and is mother approved, the unconventional leader, Chip Lutz.
Here we are, ready for another action-packed episode of Leadership Happy Hour, my favorite time of today and this week, absolutely. I tell you, my friends, you know it as well as I do. We are living in some crazy times. I'm looking forward to a little bit of normalcy. I know you're looking forward towards a little bit of normalcy. So to help alleviate some of that fear, I brought on a scientist in this episode to talk about what coronavirus is, what it's not. I'm talking to Dr. Joe Nieuwsma, really smart guy. He shares his views on how it started, how you can do your best to help mitigate the effects, help mitigate not getting it, what he's personally doing. I had a great time talking to him, a whole lot of fun, some interesting things in there. You're going to want to make sure you listen up. So I want you to kick back, pop yourself open a cold one, and enjoy. Hello, friends, and welcome to Leadership Happy Hour. This is Chip Lutz, the Unconventional Leader. And today, man, we are getting technical. We are getting deep with my good buddy, Joe Nieuwsma. He is a doctor. He is the doctor of all things toxicology, wellness. I mean, this guy has got it going on. We're going to be talking a little bit about COVID-19. We're going to talk about keeping your sanity. We're going to talk about just maintaining your health as well. So welcome, Dr. Joe, to the show, my friend.
Hi, how are you, Chip? I'm glad to be here.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. Now, for my listeners, if you give me a little background, a little 411, who Dr. Joe is.
Sure. Absolutely. Dr. Joe is a guy who, when he was in undergraduate school, wanted to be a doctor. And I was an average score with a 3.3 GPA and an average MCAT and not a whole mess of extracurriculars in the late 80s. So medical schools didn't want white guys with average stuff in the late 80s. So when I applied to eight medical schools and two graduate programs, I got into two graduate programs and I got one interview at the Navy Medical School in Bethesda, Maryland. So, then the Navy lost my physical samples after that and wanted me to go back and do it. And I never did. So here I went to graduate school and ended up getting a PhD. And,
nice.
So I was, undergraduate was biology and chemistry with a pre-med major. And then I worked for Dow Chemical for a while and, you know, hanging out with those PhDs said, well, you know, you should apply to graduate school too. So, you know, that was the fallback position and ended up being the primary position. Mm-hmm. And, it served me well because, I found out that I'm not really that into sick people. And being a doctor would have been problematic.
Yeah, but might be a little hindrance to the practice, you know, like, well,
exactly.
You know, ask your receptionist, well, do they look sick?
Yeah.
Oh, send them away. I don't want to see sick people.
and that's funny because, you know, my dad was an oral surgeon and he was a career naval officer. So he trained most of the oral surgeons coming out of the Navy during my formative years. And so he's obviously the inspiration for wanting to be a doctor and all. Oral surgeons really don't see a lot of super sick people. And, you know, when I discovered that I really didn't like sick people, my wife, who's a pharmacist, said, well, you know, if you had gone to medical school, you probably would have been, you know, a dermatologist or an orthopedic surgeon. How's that for both ends of the spectrum? But, you know, having gone the PhD route and got a PhD in toxicology, I skipped the postdoc and started working for a pharmaceutical company. So, you know, I got the chemical company background with Dow Chemical, and then I had the pharmaceutical company background. I worked in the for Sando, which was the generics arm of Novartis, one of the big ones. So I've had a lot of exposure to pharmaceutical products, and my bread and butter was really protecting employees. So what I did was set occupational exposure limits, which is the amount of a drug product that somebody making the drugs, the tablets and the capsules in the plants, can be exposed to before there's any increased risk of adverse effects. So it's really a safety job. It's an OSHA thing. And not really doing the hardcore toxicology studies. It's taking care of your people. And then the other thing that I did a lot of is, and this can kind of be scary for people, it's like I said, how much of drug A can be found in drug B before it's a problem? And so, you know, it's like, well, what are they making there and how are they making it? And why is drug A in drug B to begin with? So, you know, it's a regulated environment. And then the best part about who Joe Newsma, Dr. Joe, actually is it only took me about 6 years of corporate America in the drug company to realize that my mouth and corporate America are completely incompatible. So they actually ask people what they think about things, you know, problems in the industry. They don't want any part of the answer.
They ask you, but they really don't want to know.
And it's my personality that if someone asks me a question, I'm going to give them my answer, my opinion, my thoughts. And so I figured it out that if I was going to be very successful in life, then I was going to have to get out of the corporate scene and get into my own gig. And so Superior Toxicology and Wellness was born, Chip. Awesome. I've been doing that for the last 16 years. And I classify myself as a serial entrepreneur. And so I've done lots of different things, but Superior Toxicology and Wellness has always been the backbone of that. And it's supported my forays off into the entrepreneurial world. And it's certainly gotten me a lot of experience and a lot of good stories to talk about and that sort of thing. So
awesome.
That's who Dr. Joe is.
When you were talking about your OSHA job, seeing how much exposure people could have, in my mind, I was thinking, it's like, well, you know, you're looking over at somebody's like, well, their eyes are kind of like, bulging out a little bit. Well, you probably better get them out of there.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And you know, it's all based on what they're working with. Cause sometimes, you know, the bulging eyes might be a good thing because they're working with a diuretic and you got to get rid of some of that fluid. Or sometimes they're working with a drug product. You know, most people would know it as Xanax, but I know it as Alprazolam. And, you know, the final drug product has like 1-3% of the active ingredient, but they're working with a barrel of 100% active.
Wow.
And it's those you got to watch carefully, because if they get it up in their breathing zone, they could drop like flies and have a free 3-day pass to the ICU.
Oh my gosh. I've
seen all that happen. So it's,
wow.
Yeah, it's funny. It's the drugs are designed to have an effect on the human body.
Right.
And if you give them a pathway of exposure, that effect is going to happen. So that's the interesting part about pharmaceuticals.
No, I'm excited about our conversation today, especially with everything that's, you know, currently going on. But before we get into that, I'm just going to ask you a random question that has nothing to do with our actual conversation. So now, you obviously grew up a Navy brat. So
yes, sir.
All right. So I imagine your dad transferred every place. So looking back on your childhood, what was your favorite place that you guys transferred to, you know, and what was awesome about it?
Well, my favorite place was in the Tidewater Chesapeake area of Virginia, because we were there for 10 years.
Nice.
And my dad was stationed at the Portsmouth Naval Hospital. Then he did 3 years on the aircraft carrier Forrestal, which was based out of Norfolk. And then he got returned to the Portsmouth Naval Hospital for another tour. So we were there from like 1974 to 1981-ish. You know, and that's where I went from, you know, I grew up all the way through my elementary and middle school years. And, you know, that's where we played all our Little League baseball and our little football. That was one of the best times and places where we lived. And it was, you know, we lived in Chesapeake, Virginia, and, it was unique because we went from there, you know, in what you could call the heart of the South. The next duty station was Libertyville, Illinois, up at the Great Lakes Naval Training Center. And, you know, as I moved between seventh and eighth grade, and the unique perspective for me in that part is, in seventh grade, we studied the Civil War from the South perspective. And in eighth grade, we studied the Civil War from the North perspective. You'd think you're talking about two separate things.
Oh, that's funny. Now, have you been back to the Tidewater area since?
Just passing through. I haven't spent any significant time. Yeah, I did do a week in Williamsburg on vacation.
Nice. Yeah, I was stationed there in 86, and I was stationed there in that area for 10 years off and on. And, like, I remember, like, being there in 86 when I got stationed back there in 96. It was, like, a completely different area. It was crazy how much different it was. Just expanded all over. That was unreal. Well, like I said, thanks for your dad's service. As a Navy guy myself, it's always kind of cool to
Thanks for your service.
Oh, well. One of the best jobs I ever had. So I'm looking forward to our conversation, like I said, especially with everything that's going on today. So let's jump right in into, like, the whole, you know, pandemic, of, you know, from, you know, your perspective as a scientist, you know, how do you view things?
Oh boy, that's a loaded question, Chip. You know, I could bring out the nuclear statements right away, or I could give you the candy coated, but what I'm going to tell you is, I think that this virus is a bioweapon, and I have a paper that in my mind proves it beyond a shadow of a doubt, based on there's 12 little nucleotide base pairs in the middle of this virus that have never been seen in a naturally occurring coronavirus. And those base pairs had to have come from laboratory manipulation. So the fact of the matter is, it is a bioweapon, but the other question is, whose is it and how did it get out of containment? And so, having said that, we can chew on that if you want, but
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but that is something that, like, crossed my mind a little bit. It's like, how did this just come about like this? And so, yeah, let's open up that box. I don't see anything on the news about that. So, you know, throw it out.
No, you won't. And I'll tell you what, the paper that I have, and I'm happy to share it with you, I'll send it to you. But the paper that I have is, it was published in 2020. It's in Antiviral Research. And the primary author is, the work was done in France. Primary author's name is Coutard, C-O-U-T-A-R-D. But they talk about that one section that makes it much more efficient at jumping from person to person. And really? It's that base pair that makes it so infective. And the fact of the matter is that makes this, I don't know what we want to call it, we'll call it COVID-19, that makes COVID-19 so dangerous is that it reproduces so quickly. And the way a virus reproduces, Chip, is that it finds a new host. And that host is the next human. And the fact of the matter that this 12 additional nucleotides that help it bind to the receptor that gets it into the humans, which is the ACE2 receptor. And that receptor is found everywhere throughout the body. It's on the heart, it's on the lungs, it's on the kidneys, it's on the liver, it's on your vasculature. More importantly, it's all over the tissue that's found in your nasal passages, your mouth, your nose, your pharynx, your bronchioles. And all of those structures are littered with this virus receptor. Mm-hmm. So somebody that has the virus sneezes on you, and you get loaded up with these virus particles, they're going to get in because they're going to find that receptor, and they're going to get in and latch on that much more efficiently because of those extra 12 base pairs. And because the coronavirus, the COVID-19 coronavirus, is much more infective than your average everyday run-of-the-mill virus. And that's like your common cold, your rhinoviruses. That's like your flu viruses. And that's even other coronaviruses. And this one, the COVID-19, it doubles in population every 2 to 4 days. And that's just unheard of in normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill viruses. This one has really been tuned quite diabolically, if you will. And it just points to the fact of why somebody would do that and why that they would let it out of containment and what's really going on. I don't know that part of it. All I know is that the virus that's out is man-made. So, and I got the paper to prove it.
That is interesting. Cause you don't, like I said, you don't hear anything about it.
No, you won't.
Nothing. I mean, like I see on Facebook people, conspiracy theory, stuff like that. And it was one of those things where I was like, this seems really strange that it just, has gone so fast, so quick.
Yeah.
But,
And I'll tell you what, Chip, my nature as a person, another Dr. Joe-ism, if you will, is I'm one of the easiest people on the planet to take advantage of once, and I believe that there is good in just about every human being on that walks this earth. And just wrapping my head around how and why something like this could actually happen and maybe even happen on purpose. I can't explain it and I don't get it.
I'm like you. I'm one of the most trusting people I know. I take everybody at face value. So it's one of those things where it's hard to wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
Now the way you explained this virus, it seems that, there's really, aside from isolating yourself, like they're telling everybody, dude, you aren't exempt.
Right. You aren't. And I have some personal thoughts on that. And it disagrees with the whole people in charge approach. They're saying everybody go home, stay there, don't go out unless you need to go get some groceries or meds or, just vital functions. And I am of the opinion that you need to protect the at-risk populations. And the at-risk populations, if you're 60 and over, and if you're especially 70 and over, I think the 70 and over death rate on infections is up around 20% right now. And if you have those underlying medical conditions, the respiratory things, the things that are decreasing your ability to fight this infection, basically. So immunocompromised or some breathing issues, COPD or asthma, those types of things. And if you protect those populations, my opinion is you don't have to be as restrictive with the rest of the crowd. You don't have to absolutely snuff out all the little micro economies in order to stop this, because this particular virus, it's going to go. It is going to get through all the people. If you do nothing, they say, and I agree, 80% of the world's population would be infected with this virus. And the fact of the matter is 97% plus or minus two of the people that get this virus are going to recover. So what does that mean? Well, most people are going to recover. If you know somebody, or especially if you are somebody that has a serious case, you're going to die. And
that's
unfortunate, especially if it's you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the fact of the matter is most people are going to survive it. And, some of this is now coming out that it's not as age specific as they once thought, because some kids very young are getting it and some 20 to 30 somethings are getting serious cases. Well, you know what? That's going to happen, because if anybody has ever taken statistics in their life, and I'll tell you, Chip, I took it three times because statistics is just, it's horrible.
Yeah.
But you throw everybody into that normal distribution bell curve, and most people are going to be in the 80% of the population in the middle. But then you get your one standard deviation away from the mean, and you get your two standard deviations away from the mean. And when we're talking about a three-year-old that gets coronavirus and it's serious and they end up on a ventilator, that's two standard deviations away from the mean. So you're talking about outliers. And what the media really likes to do is they like to take that outlier and throw it in your face like it's part of the normal. So you got to take that. But I think if you protect your at-risk populations, you can allow the NBA to play basketball games. You can allow the NHL to play hockey games. You could have March Madness. You could have normal campus life. And then just tell those folks, don't go visit your grandparents. And how much a normal life would actually change, because You ask the grandparents, those grandkids never come visit them. You know, I mean, it's that simple. Right. And the other thing that you can model how fast a virus gets through a population. And the perfect model for that, Chip, is any college campus. Go to the Student Health Service and ask them to look at their modeling data or their cases of sexually transmitted disease. Anybody on that campus has that sexually transmitted disease, which is a virus, you're going to see it spread like wildfire. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for the coronavirus. It's a virus. And you know what? H1N1 flu is out there. And the normal everyday seasonal flu is out there. And the common cold is out there. Right. Some people get sick every year. Some people never get sick. Let's evaluate what those people do differently. And a lot of common sense comes into play. You know, you got to watch the surfaces you touch, and you got to wash your hands. And after you touch all those common surfaces, whether it's a shopping cart handle or a door handle or a counter or, you know, even handling your mail, mm-hmm. you got to wash your hands. Mm-hmm. And if you wash your hands before you touch your face, that's good. And then the other thing is you got to wash the things that you're carrying around with you that touch other things. How many people set their phone down on a counter, do something, and then pick it back up?
Right.
Well, the best way to look at this coronavirus thing is get some glitter. Most people have glitter. And put the glitter on your hands. Pick up your phone. Put it your hands in your pocket. Touch your refrigerator handle. And then go wash your hands. Get all the glitter off of your hands. Mm-hmm. And then go about your normal day for a while. Pick up your phone. Get something out of the fridge. Touch the counter. See how much glitter is back on your hands. That's the perfect way to know you are effective in being clean.
That is a great way to think about it too, because glitter is like, you can't get rid of that shit.
There you go.
It's everywhere.
I mean, it is a perfect surrogate for the coronavirus.
Yeah. Like this morning, I had my daughter's telecommute and she's got two small kids. So I've been trying to like watch the kids here and there. So I went into town to get them. I had to stop and get gas. And I was thinking, you know, I'm touching the gas pump. I'm putting my ATM card. I'm putting my numbers in there. I'm mm-hmm. touching all these different things. And I get to her house. I'm touching, you know, the handle. I'm going in the house. I wash my hands. But even after I wash my hands, I thought, how many other things have I, you know, steering wheel, everything. I don't have enough wipes to wipe everything down for everything that I've touched.
Exactly. I actually made my own disinfectant spray. And I carry a bottle with me everywhere. And it's...
I guess that's one perk to being a scientist.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm in talks right now with a couple bottlers who say they can make 10,000 bottles a day. And I'm going to make it available as soon as I can to all kinds of people. Because it's not alcohol-based. It doesn't make your hands look like alligator skin. So.
No, because I was thinking the other day, I mean, thinking about this whole thing, and I was thinking back, you know, 100 years ago with the Spanish flu, which wasn't Spanish, as you know, that, you know, we didn't have social media, you know, certainly it was in the news, but, you know, people didn't probably get the amount of news that they get now on things. And that's, you know, a couple of years, you know, well, I don't know how long it was, but, you know, life was pretty much normal. It didn't change everything. And I think that with this, everybody's looking at it as like, is the end of life as we know it. But I look as that eventually, you know, it might take a little longer than we anticipate, that life's going to be pretty much like it was before. Just, we might be a little more cautious on how we act or interact with the people
around
us.
With a little difference. That's exactly right. Yeah. The Spanish flu, you know, there was pockets that got seriously hit hard. Mm-hmm. And just like you can see with the coronavirus, if you look at the coronavirus spread map, The hardest hit areas are your densely populated zones.
Right.
So it's your urban areas. And the thing about it, and I described this to some of my elderly friends yesterday, I said, you know, you guys do your three things you do. You know, you're in your house, you go to the office, you go to the post office, you go to the grocery store, and you go to two, maybe three restaurants that you like where you live. Mm-hmm. And those five places are all you go to. Mm-hmm. And you have other people in your town that have their routines and they go to those places. The only way something is introduced from the outside that's pathogenic is some stranger coming through town. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about that, that's how the Spanish flu got worse in different places, is somebody visited from somebody where it was. So somebody was in New York and then came to rural America. Next thing you know, you got 25 people dead in rural America.
Right.
A perfect example of that, Chip, is Columbus and all of his explorers bringing that wonderful condition, syphilis, to the Native American population.
That's because it's a introducing, you know, something new from, you know,
and it's the power of infectious disease. Yeah. And as powerful and like top of the food chain thought that humans think they really are, we aren't. I mean, look at coronavirus has done, and, you know, look at Ebola virus. You know, Ebola virus, there's some of those that have an 80% death rate if you get infected with those things. So we're not the top of the food chain. There's no way in hell we're close to the top of the food chain,
right?
You know, and with coronavirus in particular, it's not a pleasant death, because what happens, I mean, you get infected with coronavirus and it gets in your lungs and it creates this massive inflammation reaction. So your immune system says, inflammation reaction, there's a foreign invader we need to fight, and pulls in all these cells. Mm-hmm. And when the immune system's pulling in all these cells, these are your T cells, your B cells, your macrophages, all of these things. They bring in cytokines and chemokines. That's a big scientific term for somebody that says, yo, hey, come here. And they call in more cells. So basically your body is calling out the cavalry. Mm-hmm. And when this happens, your blood vessels get leaky, which means they twist wide open and the cells get far apart. So all kinds of fluid can get into your blood vessels and then in to help that inflammation reaction. And when the inflammation reaction is happening in your lungs and your body draws in all this fluid, that's when you get the pneumonia and you essentially drown in your own secretions. And that's how people are dying from coronavirus.
That doesn't sound pleasant at all.
It's not.
At all. Matter of fact, I could think of a lot of different ways I would rather go than that way.
And we'll be right back with Dr. Joe, but now it's time for the Hot Skinny. Hot Skinny is where I share a leadership tip with you. And this week's leadership tip, well, it's more of a life tip. And this week's tip is to have faith. In the Bible, in Hebrews 11:1, it says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the convictions of things not seen. I mean, we're all dealing with a lot of things. And the most important thing that we can do right now is have a little bit of faith. Faith that things are going to work out. Faith that the government knows what they're doing. Faith in our fellow man that they're going to do the things they need to do. Worry accomplishes absolutely nothing. Have a little bit of faith. God has got your back.
Hey listeners, if you're looking for a practical, no-crap speaker for your next business meeting or conference, Chip Lutz is your man. Learn more at his website, unconventionalleader.com.
Well, we're getting ready to get back with Dr. Joe. I mean, he's sharing some pretty weighty science stuff, man. He is blowing me away. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around everything he's telling me. But I am doing my best, so let's get back to Dr. Joe.
Now, I'm thinking about that whole bell curve you were talking about. So, your best, you know, what do you think, like, the cycle is going to be on life getting back to semi-normal? Like, I live in Wisconsin, actually just about 30 minutes north of Libertyville, mm-hmm. where it used to be.
So you're around Kenosha.
I am. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I live out in the county, as we say here. I don't have any neighbors. It's nice. Being at home really is no different for me, because I usually am here anyway. And the governor has put everybody stay at home for a month. And I was like, well, is that going to be long enough, or is it too long? I mean, what is this cycle going to be like? Because I think about that eventually people are just going to get so tired of being in their house that they're going to be like, well, survival of the fittest. I got to live my life. I'm not making my, you know, I'm not working. I'm not bringing any money in. You know, and people can get a little bit selfish when it's their own survival. So, you know, what's your forecast?
You know, that's, you stated it very, very well, and it's just going to be a matter of who can hold out longer, the people that are trying to do the right thing and listen to people, mm-hmm. or the people that are like, you know what, this isn't working for me. I gotta make sure that, that we're good, and that my family is good and my inner circle is good. Mm-hmm. I think that we're going to see permanent changes. I think that people are going to be much more aware of surfaces. And I think routine disinfection is going to become the new norm, you know, in office buildings and doctor's offices and schools and public buildings and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But with this initial outbreak of virus, then I think that we will see things getting back to normal. I would say starting in like 8 to 10 weeks. So mm-hmm. that's like April, May, like end of May, beginning of June, and definitely by an end to July. I think that, that we'll see normalcy on the horizon and maybe some things coming back into play. Mm-hmm. But if they go to a less restrictive policy of protecting at-risk groups and allowing more everyday activities, what's that? That's going to create another mini little surge. Mm-hmm. And all of this stuff is all based on flattening the curve. You know, that's the flavor of saying what we need to do is make sure that we don't get a spike in cases, so we overwhelm the medical systems, because mm-hmm. the hospitals and areas only have a certain number of ventilators. And if you need more than that, then someone's going to die waiting. Uh-huh. So what we're trying to do is decrease the spread of the virus so that when people are done with the ventilators, we can get them on someone else. And, you know, there's other ways around that. Obviously, you can make more ventilators.
Right. So if somebody's got a ventilator and they're, you know, they're in a risk group, their body.
Well, the ventilator's in the ICU, so they're already in the hospital suffering.
Okay. All right. So yeah, I'm glad you explained that, because there are a lot of things that I just don't know about, you know, how That's everything right. works with this. Yeah. So, you know, with that, ideally, I mean, your body, you know, if you had the right equipment, you could make it through.
Oh, absolutely. The ventilator gets around the lungs filling with fluid.
Okay.
Because they put you on mechanical breathing, and it takes your lungs out of the equation, so your tissues still get the blood and the oxygen that they need to live. Mm-hmm. And what goes on then is that that ventilator extends your life so that they can treat the pneumonia. Mm-hmm. And then once they get that pneumonia taken care of, then they can work on the viral load and getting you back to health. And you're beginning to see the stories of these people that have survived exactly that.
Right.
So it is possible, if the medical resources are there, for as many people that will need it. But all of this, shut everything down, stay home, don't touch anybody, don't shake hands, and then you go, you push out how fast the cases arise. And if you push that out, then the numbers will show you won't have as many serious cases, and the assault on the available medical infrastructure will be tolerable as right. opposed to overrun. So, right. And then, you know, the other thing is that a lot of the medical folks are saying is, you know what, if you're sneezing or have a runny nose, or you are, you're allergic to the daffodils that are coming up in your front yard, don't go to the emergency room and get asked to be tested for coronavirus. And the thing about it is, and I have a good side-by-side comparison, coronavirus shares symptoms with the common cold and the flu and allergies. And the only difference is severe shortness of breath. Now, if somebody is significantly dehydrated because they also had vomiting and diarrhea, then, you know, they need to go get help. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to go to the emergency room, but don't overload the emergency room if you're suffering from seasonal allergic rhinitis.
Right.
And if you don't have the trouble breathing, you more likely than not don't have coronavirus.
It's so funny because up until 2 weeks ago, I mean, I was on the road because I'm a speaker, so I was on the road a lot. And so when everything got canceled, I was at home. And then here last week, I was like, I was coughing a little bit. My head, you know, it was stuffy. It's like, you know, man, I've been really on the road a lot. I actually got stuck in Phoenix, had to sleep on the floor in the airport. And I was like, what if I pick something up? And so I was like, I'm just going to wait it out. So next morning, I was like, you know what? This is a sinus infection. I've been here before. So I pumped some antibiotics and I was fine. So
there you go.
I was just like, I'm not going to.
Everybody who travels picks something up somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, those airplanes are cesspools. They're petri dishes.
I just said that last week.
This outbreak is going to.
On a good day of airplanes, petri dish. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. And it's going to change. And, you know, they're going to do these disinfections runs in between the flights. And, you know, that's just going to be normal operating procedure, and it's going to be part of everyday life. Coronavirus, still, there's some things that people can do to boost their odds of avoiding infection and taking care of themselves. And it's really common sense stuff. We talked about some of them. Mm-hmm. Washing your hands, watching the service you're taking. Find your hand sanitizer of choice and always have it with you. You know, use it copiously and just to make sure that you're not setting yourself up for failure. And if you're chasing the little monkskins around, you really got to be double aware, because you got to watch what you touch and you got to watch what they're touching.
Yeah,
and absolutely. It's all a matter of how it comes together. Mm-hmm. But if people are proactive with washing their hands, and then the other side of the coin is general wellness, Chip. It's, are you eating well? Are you getting enough rest? If you smoke, friggin' stop. Mm. And if you don't, that's great. And, you know, make sure you're hydrated. And all of those things really promote the wellness to help you fight those infections. You know, if you quiet your environment, you know, I don't want to call it meditating, because then everybody thinks of the mountaintop gurus with the man bun and a toga,
right?
And I don't want to go there, but if you quiet your environment and just, you know, think about yourself, trying to get in touch with your own consciousness, that helps promote wellness and increased immune function as well. And, you know, I tell you, I'm happy to talk about it. I push one supplement on the face of this earth, and it's called C60 Complete. And that, if you get on C60 Complete, you're going to give your body the best chance to avoid this infection than you possibly could. It's made with three different ingredients. C60 Complete has the carbon 60, which is the world's best antioxidant, and it has black seed oil, and it has curcumin, and those are both natural products that have been used for centuries, and both of them have direct effect on microbials, so that's bacteria and viruses. And basically, when in combination, this product gives you the best chance to optimize your immune functioning to fight off that viral attack. And the way it does that is the C60 squelches oxidative stress. And oxidative stress is a side effect of breathing. So anybody who's breathing is generating oxidative stress in their body on a regular basis. And the C60 takes that oxidative stress out of the equation, giving your body a whole bucket full of resources that it can reallocate to other things, like healing, because that's what the body does when it has extra resources. Mm. It heals. And your body knows where that needs to go. So when you have C60 on board, you're going to get a lot of extra benefits. You see benefits in cardiovascular. Like, I have a buddy who takes C60. He's been able to dump his blood pressure medicine. And I have a buddy who had a stroke 7 to 10 years ago. C60 has brought him back. There's absolutely no effects of that stroke in his body at all.
Wow.
I know a gal who was suffering macular degeneration, and C60 reversed it. We have the before and after pictures from the optometrist. The doctor thinks he did something miraculous and cured her macular degeneration.
Wow.
But it's this product. And if you Google fullerenes, black seed oil, and curcumin, you'll get 28,000 different hits that are people with various medical problems that have had positive effects because of one, two, or all three of these particular ingredients.
Hmm.
And the one that I like, the C60 Complete, I'm gonna completely give the, it's by LiveLongerLabs.com. and you go on there and you look at reviews, you'll find a review by Dr. Joe. That's me. I was the first guy that said, this is a good product. This is why. This is what it does. This is how it works. And this is why you should take it. Mm-hmm. You can find that written in common everyday terms. And you can find that written in, all right, you have a PhD and you're skeptical. Here's your version. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, my mom and dad, they're 80 years old. You know, my dad did 26 years for the United States Navy in the dental corps. And then he taught for another 25 years at the University of West Virginia. So an oral surgeon. But now he's 80 years old and he has been diagnosed with interstitial pulmonary fibrosis. You know, so that means your lungs are shutting down, scarring up, and we don't know why. Mm-hmm. And the lung doctor said, well, there's nothing we can do for you. I give you about 2.5, 2, maybe 3 years, and then you're done. Mm-hmm. And, well, I didn't take that. I told Max at Live Longer Labs about what the doctor said. So Max says, no, we got to get him on C60 complete. And since then, you know, my dad's on oxygen, and he used to take 30 minutes to get his oxygen saturation back up to levels, but now it takes 5. And he used to run his oxygen machine at setting 3, and now he doesn't like to take it off of 2 because he thinks he can make it through the day at 2. Mm-hmm. And just the other morning, I got a word that he and my mom had, they started their day by going down to their basement gym, which has been there for 30 years, and doing a workout, for crying out loud. They're 80 years old. And awesome. I tell you, it's all about C60. My mom had just, she had a knee replaced about a year ago. And then about 3 weeks ago, she had her second knee replaced. And this time around, she was on C60 for that knee replacement. And there was a lot less pain, a lot less swelling, a lot less inflammation. And her recovery is weeks ahead of the first one. So the fact of the matter is the C60 with its antioxidant activity and the two other natural products can really help people, set them up to stave off this viral infection. Mm-hmm. I'm on it. My wife is on it. My 18-year-old son is on it. My 21-year-old daughter is on it. And we're doing the social isolation, but it's not going to help us because my wife is a pharmacist. She works for Walgreens. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she fills over 600 prescriptions a day and sees people from all walks of life 3 feet away from her. So, you know, giving my family every tool in the box to avoid the infection and contamination, you know, that's my homemade disinfectant that I'm trying to get on the market. Mm-hmm. I'm going to market that as Dr. Joe's Pro Disinfectant. It's great. But, you know, and the C60, we're hunkered down. We're going to try to get through this because I understand the biochemistry of the virus, which most people don't have. They don't have that in their tool bag.
No, I don't. I have no idea.
It's scary when you think about it, but if you stay logical, mm-hmm. and I mean, being from a Navy guy, I'll say stay tactical and keep your eye on the goals of the mission.
Yeah.
You're going to get through this.
Right. Well, because I was, you know, there's some, I don't know, conflicting stories on whether if you get it once, you can get it again. And then I was just thinking, like you were just saying, as far as like taking care of yourself, like I never get the flu shot. I never get the flu. I eat well. I get plenty of rest. I live a pretty, I would say, safe life, but I don't say insulated either, but because I travel, but I was thinking, well, you know, even if I were to get this, maybe it wouldn't be really all that bad simply because I do take pretty good care of myself 99% of the time.
You're giving yourself a fighting chance.
Yeah. So, but I had no idea. I didn't know about C60. And I'll ask you, where do people get that? Because I've never heard of it before.
C60, and I'll get you a link to put on your website and such. But you get it from livelongerlabs.com. That's the originator of the product. And when you click on order, it sends you to the exclusive distributor, which is purebellavita.com.
Okay.
And that Pure Bella Vita is, you know, pure good life. Pure Bella Vita is the exclusive distributor for the C60 products. And the C60 Complete is the top of the line product. There's lots of other things that any of them can help you. And the fact is that this virus with these characteristics in this day and age where the world is so small, you got to be perfect to avoid contamination. You know, you got to watch what you touch and where you wash your hands, and you got to watch who you interact with and who they interact with. And that's completely uncontrollable.
Right.
So there is some randomness in the process. So the best you can hope for is to, you just get the tools out and you line them up, and you take each day as it comes and do your best.
Excellent.
And then I was talking to somebody this morning. He's an umpire in South Louisiana. And, you know, he said to me, it's like, Dr. Joe, I haven't told anybody this, but this is day 14. 2 weeks ago, I did a game for a middle school team, and the coach died 3 days after that game of coronavirus.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I told him, I said, well, there's good news and bad news in this, Bob. I said, the good news is you're symptom free for 14 days, and that's good. Keep doing what you're doing. And I said, the bad news is you can go up to 24 days symptom free. So, you know, he's like, oh, he thought he was scot free, you know, under the Golden Gate Bridge sailing out in the Pacific. But I'm like, well, no, you got to keep your nose on the grindstone and keep your nose clean a little bit longer there, big guy.
Right.
So and you never know where it's going to come from.
Right. I think another important thing is with everything that's going on, you know, people like, you know, say if they're furloughed from their job and they're furloughed and their kids are at home because now they've got a homeschool. So they got to worry that stress in and of itself can compromise somebody's immune system.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely can.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, you've got to make sure, like you're saying, you know, keep your game on as far as like, you know, taking time outs. And I'm with you on the whole, meditative state. I think it's a bad rap. You don't have to burn incense and do yoga. You know, it's
but everybody underestimates that 6 inches between their ears and the power of your mind.
Yeah. I mean, you know, mindfulness is simple. I had a mindfulness expert on the show, and he put it so simply. He's like, mindfulness is as simple as taking a moment to enjoy a moment when you have a moment. Just, you know, taking that quietness of the moment just to take everything in and really think about what's going on and think about your surroundings. And then if you need to make some changes, make some changes.
But always, always, always give thanks for the blessings in your life, because when you're thinking about it, they come out in dozens, and you it really makes you happy about what you have, and don't lament on what you don't have.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, my friend, I mean, this has been a fascinating conversation. You blew me away at the very beginning with the whole, you know, this is a man-made thing. Seriously, I mean, completely blew me away. I love that. Cause I see the same shit on the news every day. So it was good to hear, you know, a different perspective.
I'll tell you what, I'm happy to come back anytime you want, Chip. I'm happy to talk about anything and everything. And, it'll be my opinion. Sometimes it's right. Sometimes it's wrong. Sometimes it's middle. Sometimes you never know.
it's all food for thought. And you gave some great tips in there of just like, you know, staying the course and doing the things that you need to do. Now, if after today people want to connect with you, I mean, where do you want them to go?
There's a couple ways. The easiest way is just hit my website. It's superiortoxicology.com. And superiortoxicology.com has a contact form on there, and people can send me an email right there, and I try to respond to every one of them. Sometimes it takes a little longer. And, you know, it's when you get on that one, you'll see something else I do. It's called HOPE. It's the Health Optimization Prescription Evaluation Program. I help people get off from polypharmacy. You know, most people are on more than one drug,
right?
And their doctors never have time to talk about that. And I do that for people.
Awesome.
And you'll see those buttons, but that's the easiest way to get me is right through the website. But if you fill out the question on Live Longer Labs or Pure Bella Vita, those folks are real good at forwarding those messages to me. And I answer email that goes to those guys too, all the time. So
very cool. Very cool. Well, if we were really in a bar drinking, I would give you some kind of drunk dare, but since we're not, I'm just going to ask you a few random questions for my overstuffed Would You Rather book. Dr. Joe, are you game?
I am game.
All right, I'm going to ask you three questions. I always apologize in advance because I never know where the book's going to open up to. All right, first question, Dr. Joe. Would you rather – oh, this is appropriate for whatever. Would you rather be stranded on an island for 2 years with 20 friends of your choice or with a group of 20 famous people of your choosing?
Oh, I would go with 20 friends of my choice.
I would too. All right. Second question. Would you rather, this is horrible, run over your daughter's new puppy or forget her birthday for 2 consecutive years?
Oh boy. It depends on what the puppy has done recently, but probably forget her birthday for 2 consecutive years.
Oh, this was a great one, especially considering everything we just talked about. Would you rather lick a melted chocolate bar off the sidewalk or a friend's plush pile car seat, including all the crevices?
Oh my God. what sidewalk? Where's the city? Can I get another?
It's like, cause the car seat, I'm thinking, man, where's that kid been?
Exactly.
The sun and the
sidewalk and the candy bar, it looks more promising to me.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, my friend, I've had a lot of fun talking to you and I learned a lot in the process. Thanks so much for spending some time with me.
Absolutely, Chip. I look forward to our second time when we do it again.
Absolutely.
Well, there you go, Dr. Joe Newsma. What a super smart guy. Some weighty stuff he was throwing out there. And he said it was his opinion on the whole conspiracy theory on how the coronavirus started. So you can take that however you want. Certainly was an interesting theory. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I'm open to just about anything at this point. So I'm going to encourage you to check Joe out. I'm going to have all his information in the show notes, as well as the different things that he mentioned, the different websites, different products. All that will be in the show notes. Check it out. I also encourage you to go to my website, unconventionalleader.com, sign up for my free newsletter, and as always, lead yourself first. You got to take care of you during this time. You know, you're the only person that really can. So until next time, this is Chip Lutz saying cheers.
Thanks for joining us for Leadership Happy Hour. Please leave a review on iTunes and let everyone know how cool this podcast is. And remember, leadership theory is nice, but application is what works. Keep taking names, kicking ass, and making a difference. Do you have questions or something you'd like to hear on the show? Email the host, Chip Lutz, direct at chip@unconventionalleader.com.